afternoon. Welcome. Good afternoon. Welcome to Why Shamanism Now, a practical path to authenticity with your host, Christina Pratt, director of the Last Mask Center for Shamanic Healing. She's talking about how shamanic skills can bring us to physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual well-being, especially when nothing else can. Now, here's your host, Christina Pratt.
Welcome, and thank you for being on the call today. You're listening to Why Shamanism Now, a practical path to authenticity with your host, myself, Christina Pratt. And I'd like to begin by calling in the spirits who will help us. I call in my own ancestors that I may say things today that are of use and value to those who are listening, and I call in your ancestors so that all that is good and true and beautiful in your ancestral line may come to you. I call out to the spirits of the land below my feet and yours, and let us reach into those great spirits of the land and give thanks for this amazing home that we share. And I reach up above with my heart up into the sky realms, and I ask that all that is generous and benevolent, all that brings us protection and blessing, come to us here today and hold us in our time here together. And finally, I call out to the rich and varied and wondrous power of the heart. The heart has the power to unite the passions of the body and the clarity of the mind to manifest each of our soul's true purposes. And for that, the heart is a very, very, very special place. So, with the spirits with us here today and your spirit here, I will carry on. You are welcome to call in. The number is 866-472-5795, and we'll repeat that a little later. Or you can email at Christina@lastmasscenter.org, and we are more than happy to spice up the show with your questions. I consider it an ongoing theme of the show called Stump the Shaman. So, because last week, Gail had such a great question about this whole, so what if we are connected in oneness to all things, what am I then accountable and responsible for? It's such an excellent question. I've actually decided that we'll talk about that next week. And I am going to take her question to my helping spirits. I'm going to take it to several of my helping spirits and see what their perspective is. And so, in essence, they'll be the guests on next week's show. And if you have questions about this topic of oneness and what does that make me accountable for, that you would like me to specifically take to my helping spirits and then share the answer in our show next week, email me. And I'd be happy to do that. And other things that are coming down the line, if you choose to continue to tune in the afternoon, is we're going to have a wonderful guest who's going to talk about following your call, even when everyone, including yourself, thinks you're crazy, and that should be a really wonderful afternoon. We'll talk about working with your ancestral helping spirits and what does it mean to us today to be healing our ancestral line and healing the history that our ancestral lines carry. And a little later on in the end of February, we're going to have a wonderful guest, Ed Tick, who's going to talk about working with vets, people that have been traumatized by war specifically, and the kind of soul wounds that come from that experience and how we can truly mend these wounds. We call it post-traumatic stress now, but it's not a new thing. And Ed is doing amazing work. So these are things that are upcoming, and I just want you all to know that I'd love to have Ed come back regularly so that we can bring this information out for those who need to heal from this amazing experience they are having on our behalf called war. And all the other kinds of things we'll be talking about on the show, and for us to continue to go forward with the show, we need you to call in and to let us know that you're enjoying it. So, on to today. The topic of the day is one of my favorites, helping spirits. And so we're talking about what I consider our birthright, that every single one of us has a birthright to make a direct connection with spirit. And we talked about this somewhat last week, but the important point we're going to bring out today is that this direct connection is a working relationship. You can take questions, you can get answers, and apply those answers to your life and change things. And so this is what we're going to be talking about today, how this direct working relationship operates through shamanic skills. So first off, I just want to talk about helping spirits in general. So in the shamanic world, remember that what makes something shamanism is that the practitioner, be it a shaman who's working on someone else's behalf or simply an adult in a shamanic community who also has a direct relationship with helping spirits. So basically, you're a grown-up, right? And your job as a grown-up is to make the best quality decisions you can make. And that's challenging. I think that's always been challenging. And so one of the great values of a working relationship with helping spirits is they help us make better quality decisions. They help us see what we can't possibly see in the future. They help us to see past what is our own blindness, either from our fears or our denial, our ego, perhaps. So they come to us in many forms, and they come to us in the forms that allow us to want to listen to them. And I consider this a great act of generosity, that I am not forced to believe in something I find challenging to believe, some form or being or deity, but that the spirit world will come to me in any form that will get me to listen and pay attention. I find that enormously generous. So in shamanism, your helping spirits can take just about any form you can imagine. I've actually even seen helping spirits in cartoon form, which is actually one of my favorite experiences. So helping spirits come in forms out of nature, be they plants or animals. They come as our ancestors. They come as deities. Any deity, any human being ever on the face of this planet has dreamt up can arrive as a helping spirit, in the form of the helping spirit. I always forget some of the rest. So they can also be mythical beasts, dragons and griffins. They can be other beings that show up usually in folk tales or myth or legend. So trolls and dwarfs and fairies and various and sundry different shapes and sizes, djinns and all the different spirit beings, essentially, of all the different cultures, elementals, and spirits of the geography where you live. And often I'll ask people, you know, so why are you living in Seattle? And they'll say, oh, well, I came for a relationship. As soon as I got here, it ended. I hear that all the time. I came for a relationship. As soon as I got here, it ended. But then I started noticing the eagle or the salmon. And so often there's a relationship or the promise of relationship that moves us to a place on the planet. And really, the whole point of the relationship is to get us to where there is a helping spirit in the geography that we need to be working with. And I see that happening over and over and over again with people. And often, once they recognize why they're there and begin to become conscious about developing that relationship with the helping spirit, the whole reason for that time in their life and their existence there begins to make sense. So I think I've covered all the different kinds of forms helping spirits come in. There's also iconic beings or creatures. They're not necessarily deities, but they are, say, folk heroes or some icon that has taken on a certain life in the imagination of many, many people. So these are all the different kinds of helping spirits. And so the thing about helping spirits is that, well, I'll share some of my own story. So back in the olden days, long ago in another life, when I hadn't had my shamanic initiation yet and was just a person trying to figure out what was going on in my life, I was 20-something, and my life was pretty much a train wreck, like it is for many people in their 20s. And what I needed to get me out of that mess of my life at that time was to find out what my passion was. And at that time, a particular animal spirit started showing up in my dreams and also even entering into my meditations, which at that time were not remotely shamanic, and the animals weren't supposed to be there. But nonetheless, this animal kept showing up whenever I would enter into a state of listening, like dreams or meditation. This same animal would show up, and the animal's constant message were the messages that moved me towards my passion. And so as I moved towards my passion and I changed my life and I quit my job and I left the relationship and I moved 3,000 miles away and I went back to dancing, I, by making all of those changes, pretty much scared myself absolutely to death. And on a daily basis. Here I was living in New York with no money, didn't know why I was really doing what I was doing, and felt pretty crazy that I had basically made these changes in my life based on the words of a tiger. So as I began to have to face my fears and really moved into the dark craggliness of my own inner psychology and my own psycho-emotional fear-based stories, patterns, a new helping spirit came in who has in the physical world the ability to see in the dark. And so from that helping spirit, I gained the ability to see clearly in my own darkness, to slice through that darkness and go for the nugget, the thing that was there that I needed to learn or to know so that I could see through the fear. So this is the way in the beginning the helping spirits began to serve, to help me. And all I had done at that point in time in my life is start to listen. Now, I was also desperate, and that helps. To have strong, open need helps, because the helping spirits are responding to our need. And I was pretty sure I was desperate and confused and needed help. And so I let that need be present in my dreams and in my meditations, and the animals came. And at that time, all my helping spirits were animals. And this was happening to me before I really knew anything about shamanism. And so my point in sharing this story is simply that this is our birthright. They are there. They are really just waiting for us to listen. And in that listening, we can gain great inspiration and guidance. So what I'd like to talk about today is how we can use the shamanic skills to strengthen and clarify that relationship with spirit. Every single one of you, whether you know it or not, has got helping spirits out there wanting, trying to get your attention and to get you to listen. So what we're going to talk about today is what listening looks like. And if you have questions for us today, please call in at 866-472-5795 or email us at christina@lastmaskcenter.org. And I look forward to talking with you. Welcome back. So let me remind you all what the steps of doing a journey to work with the helping spirits look like in shamanism from a shamanic perspective. We talked last week about how shamanic journeys or shamanic trance states are induced, meaning there is something in the environment that is encouraging your physiology, your mind-nerve complex, to allow your awareness to go beyond or to go in a way that is different from the way that it normally thinks about things. And there's a whole lot of science about that. And if you send me a bunch of letters telling me you want to know about that, then I'll actually go find someone, and we'll have a guest come on and talk us about the science of that. For my money, I just love the fact that it works. So we're going to talk about how it works. So we're going to talk about journeying specifically today, but I just want to remember, just for the sake of balance and really talking about shamanism as a global phenomenon, there is also the embodiment trance state. The journey trance state is when we send our spirit self into the world where the helping spirits are and talk to them there. In other words, we go to where they live and chat and then come back. In an embodiment trance state, we invite them to come from where they are to hear into our own bodies to be present with us here. And so what we're going to talk about today primarily is just the journeying. And we talked last time about how journeys are usually supported by, in contemporary America, I would say, journeys are usually supported by a drum or some sort of sonic driver, some sort of percussive energy at the same rhythm that supports the journey. So that's the driver I'll be referring to today, although there are many, but I'm not going to go into that right now because we talked about that last week. So when you're journeying, the first thing to do is to recognize that to journey, I need to consciously choose to step out of ordinary reality life, so out of ordinary space, into sacred space. And it's just a choice that you're making at this point. It helps if you make that choice in the same place every day. So if you have a place where you journey or where you meditate or where you practice your daily discipline, whatever it is, the more you do those things in that space, that more that space is ready to turn sacred for you. But for most of us, we live with a lot of rooms that have many dual purposes, and most of us don't have a single space in our home that is purely reserved for spirit work. It would be lovely, but we don't necessarily have that, and so we need to be able to manage this transition, even if we live in a studio where we're doing everything in the same space. And so the important thing is the choice, the decision that at this time I'm moving out of ordinary space into sacred space, and often this helps by doing something symbolic to denote that. Some people lay down a certain blanket they're going to journey on. Some people light a particular candle only when they journey, or they burn a particular incense only when they journey. But they're doing something to designate this energetically in their intention and in their heart and physically in the world as this is my journey space, this is my journey time. I'm now going to leave ordinary reality and go into non-ordinary reality where my helping spirits reside. I'm going to go for a visit there, and I'm going to leave here. And so we're clarifying that there's a here and a there in our own mind. The next thing on a shamanic journey is to clarify your question. Why are you going? Lollygagging journeys don't usually work all that well in shamanic journeying because need is critically important in shamanism. And I actually spoke about this earlier. The more you need the answer to the question, the easier the journey will be. The more clear you are about your question, the simpler it will be to receive the answer to that question. The question itself is like a knife stroke that penetrates into this vast expanse, this vast field of wisdom in the shamanic world. And you need that question because everything that happens in the journey is going to revolve around that question. Okay, so then after the question, when you clarify the question, then you're going to listen to your drum or whatever your driver is and relax, and then you need to have the intention to let go. You have to be willing to leave. And then there's visualization or an experience that most people spend some time working on to learn how it works for them. It's often a tree, and there's a sense of merging with the tree, going into the tree, going down, using the way in which the tree accesses the lower realms to go into the lower world, or the way the branches access the upper world to go up. But anyway, you go up or down, and the point is basically to clear out of the realm that is mostly populated by humans and move into the realm that is mostly populated by the spirit world, because our whole point is to get out of where we always are into this other realm. Now, this is the critical piece that most people forget once they're starting to have these experiences of this other reality, is you need to choose to let your senses, your physical senses, which normally register your life around you, to stop registering your life around you. They're still going to on some sort of baseline awareness, but you need to stop paying attention to that and choose to let the sensations of ordinary life go and open up those same senses to the world that you're in. So in other words, imagine you are journeying on a hot, sticky, humid New York August day, and you don't have air conditioning, so it's nasty, and you're hot, and you're sweaty, and it's icky, but you need to do a journey. You need an answer. And so you go on your journey, and your helping spirit happens to be a polar bear, and you find yourself opening your senses to the realm of the polar bear, to this Arctic realm. It's cold and windy and snowy, and you're there with a polar bear who's got nice fur on, but you've got hardly any clothes on because you're lying on the floor in New York where it's all hot and sweaty. If you truly allow yourself to open your senses to the journey in the Arctic, you will get goosebumps on your body lying there in August in New York. And so that's what we're looking for in the journey, is the ability to shift our senses from being totally plugged in here in ordinary reality to being totally plugged in whatever realm we're taken into. So if we're in a sea realm, we're smelling the salt on the air or the dead fish in the sea. It's not always pretty. So that's what we're looking for in the journey, is the willingness to let our senses start to register another world. And then once we've done that, it's very, very easy to engage with the helping spirits that show up for us and to ask them our question. We'll go off on adventure, and then when we come back into ordinary reality, then we record that adventure, and it's that adventure that we then interpret as our answer. And so that's basically a shamanic journey. So I have a question here from Nicole, and she says that her helping spirits often show up when she's calm and feels spiritually grounded. However, lately, she's been feeling not so grounded and can't seem to connect with her helping spirits, and they don't seem to be showing up, or maybe she can't see them. And she's asking, can you tell me how I might be able to feel more grounded, or how I can reconnect with the helping spirits so that they show up with me as they have before? And this is an excellent question right here as we're talking about the process, because our personal state does affect our ability to journey. If we're really, really upset or stressed or emotionally scattered, it's hard to focus, number one, on the question. So it's hard to maintain our focus. But the second thing is, it's hard for us when we're feeling threatened to relax and let go. And so whenever we're ungrounded or emotionally scattered or things like that, there's a certain feeling of lack of safety. And when we're in that state, it's very hard to just relax and let go and move into the journey realm. So what I would suggest, if the issue is simply grounding, if you don't have a personal practice like yoga or tai chi or something that has a grounding practice in it, if you don't have a daily discipline that has a grounding practice in it, that you just work with the visualization of the tree. And since for most people the tree is also their starting place for their journeys, it's kind of handy. But you start by imagining yourself merging with the tree and asking the tree to help to teach you how to ground your energy. And so you're becoming like the tree and sending your roots down and allowing your breathing to slow down and grounding into the earth like the tree does. And you're also allowing your awareness to open up, opening your heart and your mind as like the branches of the tree. And so you're opening to receive the spirit energy that's going to come to you, like the sun being received by the little leaves of the tree and photosynthesizing and nourishing the tree. And then you're also sending your energy down and letting your blood be like the sap and really imagining yourself grounding into the earth. Trees are excellent helpers for almost all things shamanic. But that being a tree is one of the simplest grounding meditations we have, because most of us have trees in our life. It's not that hard to imagine. And so the more you can become the tree and ask the tree to show me how to be grounded and ask the tree to help you to just shake off the energy that's scattering you or ungrounding you in the first place, the easier your journey will be. The thing for most of us, grounding is really a choice and a discipline. The more we cultivate grounding on a daily basis in our daily practice, the easier we can come back to it. Grounding, to be grounded and not grounded, is not really so much a healing issue as much as it is a question of choice and energy discipline. And I don't mean that in a judgmental sense. I'm just letting you know that from my perspective, shamanically, we cultivate our groundedness by choosing to do it and visualizing it regularly on a daily basis. And as Nicole has suggested, we particularly do it when we realize, I don't feel grounded. So we have to take another break, and I welcome your questions and your emails. I have some wonderful questions for when we come back that from Joe in Baltimore, and we'll look at more of the challenges and the problems that arise in an everyday person's life trying to work with these crazy helping spirits. So come back and join us, and feel free to send us your questions as well. Thank you. Welcome back. All right. So I'm going to read some of Joe's questions here because they're really excellent. I'm not sure we'll get through all of them, but we'll give them a good go here. So Joe's first question is, so when will I know it's them and not me talking in my head? This is a challenge that we all have to deal with. I don't really know if ancient shamanic people had to deal with it, but as contemporary people, we certainly do. We are incredibly distracted in our lives, and it tends to train our mind to be distracted. And so this whole issue of when do I know that it's them and not me talking in my head, this is one of the things about the helping spirits, is they always conserve energy, and they will not use more energy than is necessary to communicate something with us. So if we already actually know the answer intuitively, they're very likely to just let us talk in our head and not come to our rescue and validate something that we already know is correct. So sometimes the answer really is in our head because we actually already have it through our intuition. However, what I think Joe is really asking is, when we're in the journey, how do we know that it is the helping spirits or it is our head? Well, the first thing that we have to do is simply practice so that we have a sense of what is the range of normal for us in journeying. But within that range, you really start to know that you're deep in a journey and receiving information from the helping spirits when you start getting answers you do not like. And that's how I really began to understand that I was not making this up, because I would have never made up that answer because I really hated that answer. So that's one, is you start to get answers you don't like, start to get answers that are very challenging, or you get answers that have a really strong impact on your life, and that's not the kind of thing you really want to know. And so that's one of the ways that you know that the spirits are talking with you. The other way is that the answers often come so quickly or in such an interesting and curious form that we can't possibly have made it up that fast or actually have made it up at all. It's just too perfect in a certain way. The answer is just too perfect for us to have actually constructed it. And so part of it is just a sense that I don't like this answer, it came so fast, or it's just so exactly right that I didn't make this up. That's one thing. The other thing ties into another question that Joe's had, which is about how can I be sure if it's my ego or my imagination or my spirit guides. And there's two parts to this answer. One part is, if we never do any emotional clearing work with our shamanic skill learning, we'll never know the difference. That there is an aspect of needing to clear up our past, our unresolved issues inside of ourselves, to be able to ultimately become really clear in our journeys over time. Journeys will start working immediately, and we will start getting good answers immediately. It doesn't take the kind of time to develop good answers the way meditation does, or, for example, my Qigong practice. I think I practiced for 2 years before I felt Qi moving in my hands. So the beauty of journeying is it can start working and giving us very good and very accurate answers immediately. That's the beauty of it. But over time, the real mastery of journey does involve a certain amount of personal work and personal clearing of all your unresolved emotional stuff from the past, so you can start to get a sense of what accurate, true, realistic emotions feel like in present time. And that will help you begin to get the feel of whether the helping spirits are communicating with you, because there's a feeling in the heart of a connectedness to the helping spirit. And so there's a feeling of that relationship and the sense in the background of that relationship connecting you to everything. And so that awareness is there in the background of whatever little adventure you're having on the journey. And that's not necessarily present when we're talking to our ego. Our ego is pretty self-important. And that's the ego's job. So I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. But because of that, when the ego is who is really communicating with you, it's usually pretty easy to feel that it's the ego, because ego doesn't have a lot of heart involved. And if there's no heart involved, it probably is the ego. Now, the imagination is the trickier piece. There's nothing actually wrong with the imagination, because the helping spirits are actually using your imagination to access your pictures, to communicate with you and have an experience with you. So your imagination in the journeys is fully engaged. But I think what Joe is really asking is, when is it my delusion? When is it my illusions, my fantasies, my wishful thinking? And the way that we know that is that in that answer, there's a little too much leap of faith. It's all going to work out. Just do what I love and the money will come. Just, you know, it's a little too simple. And what happens is people actually become more and more ungrounded. And so there's a lot of inspiration of the heart, but it also tends to unplug the heart from being grounded in the body and grounded in the passion and grounded in life. And so that's, so my sense in the different voices that I hear in my meditations and my journeys is that the voices feel different. Now, if this has gotten to be a little bit out there, I can also explain it this way. Most of us know at least one person in our life who says one thing but means another. In other words, they double signal. Their words are saying one thing, but their body language and their tone, their inflection is saying something else. And in that moment, when we're listening to that person communicate with us, we can sense those, that double message. We can feel the emotional story and the actual words that are being said. And so we do actually know this quality of feeling and testing emotionally. Do I feel this person is telling me the truth? Do I feel that we're actually constantly feeling what we're feeling while we're listening to what's being said to us? And so the easiest thing is the ego is slick, but there's never any heart. And the illusions prey on the heart, but they tend to pull the heart away from the center and the groundedness and the passion and the daily living. And so those are my sense of those, the way that we know. And we'll never know if we don't practice. Again, if we don't begin to find what is my range of normal. Because there's always a range. Some days are better than others. Some journeys are better than others. Some questions are better than others. And that's normal, and there's nothing wrong with that. Some days you just can't focus. So that's common and normal. So don't expect every journey to be the same. Don't expect every journey to have angels and trumpets and drama. And don't necessarily expect your journeys to be continuous with a script and characters and soundtrack and costumes like a movie. And the truth is, as contemporary Americans, that is what we expect. And we need to understand that it is the rare journeyer that sees their journeys that way or experiences their journeys that way. And frankly, there are people that do get those journeys, bless their hearts. I wish I was one of them, but this is the work I do in the world, and I don't see movies. So part of the practice of journeying is learning what your journeys feel like. What is the experience like? And when is it off? When is it on? When is it in the heart? When is it not in the heart? When do I feel it true in my gut? And when am I completely ungrounded and delusional? And so that's just part of the practice. There's nothing wrong with that. Joe has a great question here also, which is there a ritual or an offering that can improve my contact with my guides? And there's a huge yes to that. There's not one standard protocol, but to be willing to make offerings or to develop a ritual to connect or to offer thanks to your helping spirits is a great way to open that relationship. I mean, how do you feel personally when you have a friend you love dearly and they never call you, ever, for any fun or any good stuff until they have a problem, and then they call you with their problem, they get your opinion, and then they don't talk to you again for a year and a half? How do you feel when you get treated that way? I feel fairly abused. That's how we treat our helping spirits. So if we really want a robust, loving, exciting, humorous relationship with our helping spirits, we might want to talk to them more regularly and invite them to a party once in a while. And so by being willing to invite them into our body and let them dance, this is a big party as far as they're concerned, to make offerings. Offerings for me in the morning are songs or prayers, lighting a candle to them, leaving food offerings, maybe flower offerings. There are many, many traditional shamanic offerings. But what we need to do is to ask our helping spirits what they want. And know in that, they often say a song or a dance. And every single helping spirit has its own song and its own dance. And it is a great honor for your helping spirit to teach you its song and to teach you its dance. And when you sing that song, you honor the helping spirit, but you also call it to you. And when you dance that dance, you honor the helping spirit and call it to you. And these are part of the reasons that singing and dancing are so much a part of shamanic traditions around the world, because people are giving love back to their helping spirit. And this is what we'll talk about when we come back from this break, which is the love, which is the main message the helping spirits wanted me to share with you today. So if you have questions, you're welcome to call in at 866-472-5795. Or to email me at Christina@lastmasscenter.org. And I look forward to talking. Welcome back. So as I was talking with my own helping spirits about what they thought I should talk about with you today, the main thing that they had three main things that they said, but the most important one they said is that most people don't know about the love. And so I asked them to explain about that. And what they were reminding me about is how in the very beginning of journeying, I was journeying and asking questions and trying to learn about how to grow up in my life. And shamanic initiation hadn't happened yet. I didn't really know anything about that yet, but I was working on myself. And at a certain point, the helping spirits ignored my question, or maybe it was simply a better answer to the real question I was asking, and they simply connected to me and filled me, infused me with this deep, loving energy, which my sense of it was that this is the love the universe has for us. Or perhaps that's a little bit too personal. More, it's that the love that is the nature of our universe. And that in that time, in that journey, being connected to the spirits in that way, there was a feeling of completeness, a feeling of wholeness, and a feeling of being embraced. Not because I had somehow become a divine enlightened being, but because I was completely loved and accepted and embraced exactly for who I was in that moment. And so when that happens, then your heart opens and your heart extends that loving energy back out to the helping spirits. And then the next thing you know, that whole experience clicks to the next level, the next sort of quantum level jump, and you start feeling yourself through your helping spirit connected to everything on these energies of the heart that connect everything. And then from that, you begin to extend in and know the oneness, not so much from a sense of dissolving into it, but from a sense of feeling yourself as a minute part of it that is absolutely essential and irrelevant to the whole life of that oneness. So one of the things that most people don't understand about helping spirits is that they are a source to divine love. They are a source to this thing we all search for. And I can't count the nights that the only way I was able to go to sleep in the crazy scariness of my life was because I asked every single helping spirit I was connected to one by one, with tears in my eyes, to join me in my bed that night and to keep me safe and to help me to wake up in the morning with some clarity, at least for the next step for me to take. And I would go to bed crying, but crowded on my little futon with all these helping spirits around me, begging them to fill my dreams that night and let me wake up in the morning with some sense of the right path for myself. And it is that love that I believe is the great staying power of the relationship with the helping spirits. And where we go from that is when I have that feeling of love and connection, it's easier then for me to have faith in the answers that I get for them, from them. Now, granted, I have to interpret those answers, and here is the fly in the ointment. So I have these answers that come to me from beings that I trust and have faith in because I feel this great love that is exchanged between us. But I still have to interpret what that answer means. So let's say I ask a question and the answer is a duck. What does a duck mean? Well, I could go look up duck in the animal cards, or I could ask myself, what is my association with duck? Because the duck is coming out of my symbolic language. And my strongest association with ducks is about a time in my life when I was about 6 or 7, when my grandmother, I was staying alone with my grandmother, and she was being very controlling, and it was very upsetting, and I got very angry, and I stormed out of her apartment with a whole bag of fresh bread to go feed the ducks. And so for me, ducks are symbolic of being in a situation where there's controlling energy. And once I understood that, that explained the answer to my question, which helped me to understand I was in a situation where there was controlling energy and I wasn't aware of it, and it helped me to be clear what was going on and solve whatever the problem was. Now, the tricky thing is you have to be able to interpret your answers. And so this question, Joe has a question here about, so am I supposed to just believe in these answers even though they don't work? Sometimes they don't, but what I've found over time is when the answers don't appear to have worked, if, you know, I've gotten the answer and I've lived it, when it doesn't go well, it's usually because I've actually misinterpreted the answer. And by keeping a journal of my questions, the journeys that come from them, how I've interpreted that, and the actions that I take, I'm able to go back and say, now, wait a minute, didn't you tell me to do this? And realize that they didn't actually tell me to do that. That's simply how I interpreted it at that time. And so what comes from what I call sort of an audit and evaluate of your own journeying and your own interpretation is you begin to get sense then of how to really work with these helping spirits and how to work with your own symbolic language, which is what they're accessing to give you messages, and ultimately how to be more accurate in your translation from spirit information into actions in your life. Because usually if you interpret incorrectly, basically nothing happens. It's not that bad things happen. It's usually just nothing happens, and the thing that you're trying to change doesn't change. The other thing is I often have to go back and ask, okay, this was the answer. This is what I did with it. I obviously didn't understand the scale you meant that answer on, like how big it was, that I interpreted it in a way that was not sufficient to change the problem. It may still be the right answer, but I may have to go back and ask more questions about how to implement that answer in my life. I may have assumed that I knew and found out by doing what I thought I knew that it didn't help, that it didn't work. And so there is a certain amount of working with the answers and looking at the results and looking back at our journeys that comes from working with spirit. However, in that, what I like about working with spirit in a shamanic journey sense is that I'm not simply asked to have faith forever and ever if answers aren't working. That I'm meant to have faith in the process of asking the question, but I'm then meant to be very practical and ornery, perhaps, about how things are working in my life, and if they're not making the changes that need to happen in my life, how do I need to look at the process differently to get better quality answers? And so that's my sense of what I like about shamanic journeying, is that it doesn't require a leap of faith and just hanging on forever and ever and ever when things really aren't working, that we get to go back into the journey and say, hey, things aren't working. What's the deal? And I have had some of my best journeys going into the journey angry, crying, upset, and demanding a better answer. And boy, those things translate as need into that spirit world, and hard questions, hard answers sometimes, really hard answers to take, but man, they have been true, and by living them, I have changed my life. So thank you all. Our time is up here today. If you'd like more information about shamanism, the Encyclopedia of Shamanism is available on the website. Information about classes and healings is also available on the website, and that is lastmasscenter.org. We'd also love for you to share information about the show with other people, and you can subscribe for a weekly reminder about the show by just contacting me at Christina@lastmasscenter.org. Thank you all. Thanks to the spirits, thanks to the earth, thanks to the sky, and to the heart that unites us all.